It's time for the best 60 minutes of your life. This is the Homer Hour, broadcasting live from the Gruber Law Office's One Call That's All studio at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee. Alongside ESPN's John Anderson, here's Alex Stroph.
Okay, away we go with the best 60 minutes of your day, the Homer Hour. ESPN Milwaukee, ESPN Beaver Dam. Homer, off an island. Means I'm here with you for another couple of days. Our friend from ESPN, SportsCenter, Wipeout, Green Bay Southwest fame, the great John Anderson with me, Professor Big Daddy J. What's up, John? How are you?
Well,
Oh, boy.
I'm coming to you from my parents' basement. I don't know what that makes me.
A loser, typically. Like maybe a loser?
I need to do some life reconsidering. I'm 60 years old, and I'm talking to you from my parents' basement. Yeah, and so, you know, after a miserable performance from the Packers, I feel like if I'm too hard on them, they're like, well, what are you? You're just like some, you know, yahoo, you know, typing and saying mean things from your parents' basement. And that's exactly what I am. So I have to be careful. You know, it's a little disappointing at this age, really. But that's what it is. Here I am.
So you're home for the week.
Yeah, I came home. My son and I came up on Thursday, Friday, one of those days of the week. Friday, and then we went to the game Saturday. But we really came up because the Green Bay Rockers Northwoods League playoff games.
I saw they're in the Green Bay Rockers when they were the Green Bay Booyah, when that stadium opened in Ashwaubenon. I was the post Bullfrogs but pre Rockers era, the Green Bay Booyah, which I think they only were for 2 years. I was the very first PA announcer in that stadium right by Lambeau Field. That's my claim to fame in Ashwaubenon / Green Bay.
Some odd dimensions in that ballpark.
Indeed. Accurate statement.
So last year, my son was an intern, but he was one of their two play-by-play guys last year. And so he's still with some friends. They won the first half, and he's like, he said, do you care if I go up? I said, well, I don't care, but can I come with? And so that was the other reason we left the game after three quarters on Saturday, because we're like, this isn't even the game we came to see. Let's go, you know. And then the Rockers, they were great. And then last night, a little zip up to Wausau, a good come from behind win there.
Yeah, saw that.
We're through the first round, and now they're off in Traverse City tonight to play the old Pittsburgh.
You might be the only person on our team that I'm actually able to say this to. And then we'll get to real, you know, not minor league / collegiate league sports.
Real.
But Green Bay minor league sports are on a tear right now. The Green Bay Blizzard are heading to the Indoor Football League Championship game in Tucson, Arizona. And now the Rockers are one of the final, I think, four teams standing in the Northwoods League. Green Bay minor league teams on a tear right now.
Yeah, I have no idea exactly what's in store for the the Gamblers?
The Gamblers, the Green Bay Gamblers, the USHL hockey team. Yeah.
You know what you do if you win the USHL? If you win that championship, right?
Well, that is the Anderson Cup, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Thank you. You win the Anderson Cup.
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
Who doesn't want that piece of hardware?
I would assume no relation.
Have no idea. It might be Anderson with an EN. I have no idea.
Okay. Yeah, they won it when I was a kid, and I don't think they've been back since. So it's probably been at least 20 years or so.
Yeah, those are all Sparkies, right? Those kids are all, you know.
Yeah, they're all like 16, 17 years old, I think.
Yeah, they're Sparkies.
Okay, well, there you go. That's your Green Bay minor league update here, brought to you by John Anderson on the Homer Hour.
You just asked what brought me home, that's all. You just said, why are you home,
why. Dude, like, I'll nerd out about that stuff with you because I worked for most of those teams, you know, coming up. So I have relationships in all those buildings, so I can nerd out about those. So anyway, all right, good stuff. Let's get to the Jordan Love stuff. Obviously not the most encouraging news today. After practicing yesterday with tape on his left hand, General Manager Brian Gutekunst announcing this morning that Jordan Love will undergo and has undergone a procedure on his left hand that will keep him out for at least a week. They would like him to return to practice sometime next week. They have not ruled him completely out of the third and final preseason game in a couple of weeks against the Seattle Seahawks. And Goody and LaFleur both pretty much said point blank, he'll be good to go by week one on September 7th against the Detroit Lions. So timing-wise, I guess I'd rather it happen now than in November by all means. But certainly not ideal for a guy who dealt with injuries throughout the entirety of last season and now will miss likely the rest of preseason after a pretty lackluster performance, 1-for-5 on Saturday in the preseason opener against the Jets. I don't want to debate if he's injury prone or just unlucky, because the answer is probably somewhere in between. But it's just not the most encouraging sign coming out of a really crappy preseason performance for not only him, but that whole team.
I would ask you this. Was he going to play any more in this preseason?
So they made it sound like he might play in that third preseason game. But regardless of the injury, it sounded like the decision hadn't been made. He only played in the first game last year. So if that's any indication of how they would handle the remainder of this preseason, my guess would be no. But after 1-for-5, I would have liked to see him play a couple more series.
Yeah, you'd think. But are you going to go ahead and risk that? And they have forever. You know, they've kind of made that first game of the year, regular season game, feel like a preseason game, the way they've handled things. So, it appears from what we saw, right? Like every rep could be valuable.
Mm-hmm.
So in that regard, yes, I think I'm way more worried about the practice time miss than I am that he's not going to play in an exhibition game. That said, it was a little to me like watching me practice when I play golf. Because I think, okay, I go play and you play horribly. And I think I really need to go to the range. And you're like, you know what? I don't want to go to the range and just find out how bad I am. So maybe I feel like the way he played, like, I don't know, do we want him to go back to practice and just throw it over the lot and miss everybody again and see how bad he is? So who knows? Maybe he'll come into this. But it's with any of these guys. And I think it's amazing. You know, you try so hard to not get them hurt and then go look at Willis played a bunch, got beat around, fine. Clifford, same. Brady Cook for the Jets, jumped all around, fine. They brought in Martinez, got fine. Like sometimes I think maybe we're overly cautious. And yes, you'll get a Jordy Nelson, one of those. But I don't know. I just think that sometimes I'm not advocating they go in there and they play for four quarters. But I just think sometimes we use such kid gloves. And I don't know that it really prevents injury any more than if they play. It's a hard game. It's a violent game. And you can't really, like, you're just, it is going to happen when that, you know. And so I don't know. In the injury prone, like you said, that's hard. It'd be one thing if you have nicks, right? But that guy, his knee was legit. Look at the Viking guy who went out last year, plays one game. Like, is he injury prone? No, like, that's full on injury. Injury prone is the guy that, you know, my calf's tight today. I don't want to go do that. You know, those are the guys that spend all that time in the training room. So I don't know that he feels I feel that way about him. But I just think that was a team that looked like they need all the practice they can get, even though all the practice they've been doing didn't appear to do any good.
Yeah. And I think that's why I would advocate, if I could, for more preseason reps for the first team. And, you know, I think this is a fair point on the Cardinals text line from Steven. 800-990-3776. Your way in. Any comments, questions, all the in-betweens with our buddy John Anderson, Alex Stroff with you. He said Love wasn't 1-for-5. He was really 3-for-5 with two of those being drops. And sure.
Yeah, he didn't throw great. He was not, I don't know was.
You mentioned the accuracy before. I'm curious in your thoughts on that. And I know this is something we'll talk about throughout the season on Green Bay Game Day, our pregame show on ESPN Wisconsin and WTMJ. But last year was a little up and down. It was a little inconsistent for him. That's a concern for you, it sounds like. The accuracy.
Isn't it for you?
Yeah.
I mean, if you miss the receivers, that's bad.
I agree with you, obviously, right? I mean, yes. Very black and white way to put that. But I guess last year, and maybe I'm wrong on this, and you can tell me if you think I am. I do chalk last year's inconsistencies quite a bit up to the injuries. He gets that excuse no longer, right? He gets it for 1 year. But the groin injury, the knee injury, I mean, he was dealing with stuff all year. I do draw some of the inconsistencies up to that. Not all of them. I think that's being a young starting quarterback in the NFL. Some of them also. But there were moments where you go, holy crap, that's the best ball we've seen a Green Bay Packers throwing.
Anybody decided that maybe part of the drops is the guys are like, crap, I was surprised he hit me in the hands. Wasn't expecting that.
See, this is where I call you negative. Now, that's where I'd call you negative.
I believe that's what Homer would say is the salt.
Yes, correct.
I believe that's the salt. It's not that they're drops. They're just like shocked that that's where he hit them. I mean, they're used to picking it up off their shoestrings when it comes through. But, yeah, when it it is funny how everybody thinks, oh, you throw the ball right. But they'll tell you if your base isn't right, if you're not, you know, if you're compensating for a groin, or if you can't groin, or you can't plant your knee and you can't step in the direction of the throw, that certainly, you know, if you can't be on platform, that messes with your accuracy. Especially with young guys. Like you said, you get a lot of these guys and, you know, I'm not sure that Aaron threw it off platform very much by the end, right? He kind of was all the way. And you look at Patrick Mahomes, doesn't really just stand there and plant it all the time. So you can get away with it. But in this case, he didn't, when he came out, that was a little knock on him, right? Mm-hmm. He was not great with accuracy. Mm-hmm. And I do think we're beholden a little bit. I bet Jason Wilde will chime in with that. We're beholden to that, you know, 8, 9, 10 game stretch he had to close his rookie, his first year as a starter. And he has not been able to match that. And so you can tell me he was 1 for 5, but or 3 for 5, but he was 1 for 5, you know. And, yep, those guys got to catch everything, but some of them were, you know, you whistle them in there. I thought there were a couple of reads that he threw in there. I'm like, I thought he had a better guy open than the tight end where he made the long throw that, you know, they popped the guy because he got the ball there late and it wasn't in a great spot for him. You know, I thought he had another receiver open there going down the side. There was not one part of that game that was not concerning.
Yeah.
And the only thing that makes it tolerable is that you're like, okay, it was game one and they have two more. But, mm-hmm. you know, it's funny. A lot of coaches say, okay, look, we got a lot of stuff on tape. Now we can go back and coach it up. We got a lot of things on the tape that we can. All the stuff they need to coach up, it was football 101. It doesn't have to be on the tape, right? Like, I don't think LaFleur had to go, well, we need to see on the tape if guy ran the wrong route. Like, all of it was so bad that doesn't require any advanced tape review to go that, wow, they just didn't do anything that was related to playing football well.
I mean, in terms of the full 11, I fully agree with you. This is the nice part and the nitpicky part of preseason, right? It's individual guys, right? You're looking for some pop from players. We saw very limited Matthew Golden, the first-round pick. But I thought the catch on the 7-yard slant, which is very basic football, but that was impressive, right? And I thought he looked good, drawing the pass interference against Sauce Gardner. That's good for a guy who's a very highly touted cornerback in the league to get him to make a mistake on you in your first real NFL action. Like, I was impressed by him. I thought Baron Sorrell, the 4th-round pick, had some good stuff. So all in all, I think this is the nitpicky and the nitty-gritty part of preseason where nerds like you and I can go, okay, I can acknowledge this guy, and this guy had an impressive performance, but all in all, the team sucked. I agree with you.
Well, but I would counter that only with this, is none of the things they did was nitpicky. It was just all bad, right? Like, 7 holding calls is not nitpicking somebody, right? Nitpicking is, you know, it would have been nice if Golden would have, like, he got the first down, but if he cuts that 6 yards instead of 7 and he comes up a yard short, that's preseason nitpicky stuff that you're like, okay, we got to do better in the preseason. I don't think any of the things that they had were nitpicky. I thought they were all really offensive and glaring and poor. So now, do we overanalyze that because it's preseason? I might buy that a little bit. I don't know that anybody's in panic. I think everybody's the shock of it all. At least as I saw it, the people around me and all this, the shock of it to me was just how bad they played, period. I don't think anybody in preseason game thought, okay, here we go. This is, we got our best stuff. We're going to, boy, let's not leave it all, the golf term, leave it all on the range. But I thought people would go like, okay, they're going to come out and look like they practiced football before.
Yeah.
And I think that's what is disturbing, is that you didn't have to nitpick. Everything top to bottom stunk. And that to me was sort of the larger issue of it, is that, you know, yep, you can overcome it. They got 2 games, they got 3 weeks, all that stuff. But you just didn't expect them to be that lousy.
Well, you know, I was at a wedding Saturday night, so I wasn't subjected to watch as much as you were, as somebody who attended the game. But when I opened my phone,
probably saw better football at the wedding.
Yeah, you're probably right. When I opened my phone and I saw your name pop up with the question, have they just been practicing riding bikes? I thought that was fair. All right, let's take a quick phone call, and then we'll get to Jason Wilde, who I'm very excited to talk to, coming up next. Greg in Kenosha, you're on the Homer Hour with John Anderson on Jordan Love's inconsistencies. Go ahead, Greg.
Yeah, you know, I've been listening to you guys, and it's not just today, but it's been pretty much for the last year. Everybody's saying that Love is so inconsistent. He's got to improve his accuracy. And if you look at the numbers between him and Rodgers, I mean, they're within a point of each other in completion percentages, and he's better than Favre's numbers. I just don't get how you can say that, but you say both of those guys are Hall of Fame guys, and then Love needs to improve himself.
So I would assume the statistic you're looking at is completion percentage, Greg?
Yeah, because that's what you were talking about, that he's got to improve. Sure. He's missing his receivers. But his numbers are so close to Rodgers, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, last year.
I mean, I think they're within a point.
Yeah, last year they were.
No, I mean, for the first 2 years.
Oh, okay.
The first 2 years, their numbers, they're within one touchdown of each other, like, I don't know, a couple hundred yards of total passing.
But 29th in the league last year in completion percentage. I mean, that's nothing to write home about.
Well, that's nowadays. Well, that's nowadays. You know, you're talking guys are throwing 5-yard passes and screens all day to keep the percentage up. But Rodgers never did that. His numbers, that's all you guys talked about, was how good he was. He's so accurate. He could do wonders with the ball. But
totally.
Love's numbers are so similar. They're unbelievable.
I think if you look at who pushes it down the field, I think, well, one, Favre was a little, you know, pass heavy, but that's, again, the little more rule changes since then, right? You could beat the snot out of that guy back then. He couldn't just stand there, so he threw under way more duress and way more. And then it wasn't quite like Mel Blunt, but you could do a lot more to the receivers at the time. So I think Aaron Rodgers, when you talk about that completion percentage, I think he clearly throws a better ball. If it's within a point, I think he forced it down the field more. Could be wrong there. I don't have exactly come back, but it's kind of right now like saying that after the first 3 years, Matt LaFleur had a better winning percentage than Vince Lombardi. Those still aren't the same thing, even if they're close. And I think when I look at that, okay, those numbers might be the same thing, but I think if you watch a lot of that, they're not close. They don't look like the same things. The misses are bad. And some of the reads are not great all the time. And so even if they're within that, I don't know that just because the number looks the same, that the what goes into that number is the same. But,
I appreciate Greg and Kenosha's call. I'm more the eternal optimist. John, you're probably more the realist, I would say, is the relationship. I try not to call you negative.
That's much nicer than you usually.
You get offended when I call you negative. Right. So I don't want to call you cranky or negative today because I think we're off to a good start.
Yeah, usually I'm the crank in the room, so I appreciate to be the being the realist.
Well, here, I'm not going to say it, but John on the text line will. John says, John Anderson is sounding more and more like Homer every day, and it's scaring me.
How old are you?
I'm 26.
I got a lot more scar tissue, buddy.
Yeah,
I got
you do.
34 years of scar tissue that you don't have. That's all. So sometimes we, you know, you guys, you horses, you young horses tend to run fast. The old horses like me, we know the way, so we're not in as big a hurry.
Yeah, I didn't have to watch Lynn Dickey. I'll just put it that way.
Lynn was good, actually.
Yeah, he was a solid quarterback.
Right? David Whitehurst might have taken some years off your life.
Good name. Good name there.
Carlos Brown, some of the other ones. Well, make me go through these guys.
We'll add another wonderful old head to the conversation. I'm very much looking forward to talking to Jason today because there's a ton to cover. Jason Wilde, the 3-time Wisconsin Sports Writer of the Year, our resident Packers genius, joins us coming up next. It's the Homer Hour right here, ESPN Wisconsin.
It's time for Jason Wilde on the Homer Hour on 94.5 ESPN.
You know, when you're as big of a deal as 3-time Wisconsin Sports Writer of the Year Jason Wilde is, sometimes you double book yourself. But he's picked us. Jason Wilde joins us now. John Anderson edition of the Homer Hour. Alex Stroff in for Homer this week. Hi, Jason. What happened?
I'm having a day. I mean, not as bad as Jordan Love is.
Yeah, that's true.
But because my thumbs are working just fine for now. So first of all, a lot going on, obviously, as you guys know. Secondly, I was in the middle of something at Lambeau, so I pushed Jim, Matt, and Molly, which is apparently Jesse Nelson hosting, which...
You talked to him enough.
Draw your own conclusions. So I said, hey, can I push back into the 5 o'clock hour? Didn't even think of the fact that I had you knuckleheads at 5:15. So I'm like, yeah, sure. Like, you know, they said 5:15. I said, sure. And they get to me at 5:20. I've taken one kid to gymnastics practice. Then I realized after I got home that I left my computer at Lambeau Field.
Oh, no.
So now I'm on my way back to Lambeau while I'm talking to you guys, to go get my computer. So I'll be walking into the stadium while I'm talking to you. Then I'm going to get done with you guys, get back into the car, drive back home while I'm talking to Jesse and whoever else is filling in for Jim, Matt, and Molly. I'm completely out of sorts, and it's all because Goody marched into the press conference this morning, which, thank God, I decided to go to and shirk my responsibilities on Wilde and Dausch to be informed that Jordan Love had, quote, a little procedure.
Little, yeah.
And
I caught that.
A ligament thing with his left thumb. So we'll see how things work out. I know that, as is often the case with surgeries, we've been told that everything went great. It was a successful surgery. They didn't accidentally amputate his thumb, and
yep.
They feel good about it, but we'll have to wait and see if it truly is the non-factor, no big deal that we're being told it is.
Goody very clearly did not get a medical degree from the Harvard of the Midwest, UW lacrosse. John Anderson, the floor is yours.
Well, first off, you know, thoughts and prayers, Jason, as you continue to fight through adversity today.
it's so good for you. And the girls hear that speech all the time. Although they got a different speech today, I had to get after them a little bit.
Uh-oh.
There was some unkind behavior that was occurring after their first golf match of the season. But I will say this. Adversity builds character. It also reveals it. And as you're hearing me whining about all this, you can tell that my character's not very good.
Well, this is not an original line, but thank you for your service.
Hey, by the way, speaking of unoriginal lines, I got a bone to pick with you, buddy.
Yeah.
So my understanding is that you're trying out material. You don't have the social media channels, but
right.
you're trying out some material. So I shared your great line from Saturday night's game, and it's probably the most popular tweet that I've had because I don't use Twitter
right.
much. Not as I have it, unlike you, but I don't use it much anymore. And it had like 2,000 likes. So, you know, I just described you as a Packers fan friend who's not on Twitter. And I just
right.
want you to know, you still got your fastball. You should feel very good about it. I just didn't realize you're going to send the same thing to Strolf.
You want to hear the worst part is?
Uh-oh.
Because, no, so you sent it to me, and I this
Uh-oh.
Is going to be great.
Uh-oh.
No, so I didn't really think you were going to put it out there because I'm not on Twitter, and I thought that was thing. That was what my wife sent to me. That's my wife.
Oh,
and I
wow.
just told it to you. Yeah, that's my wife.
You stole
like, there she goes.
Stolen
yeah,
material.
That was camera.
Not only was it reused, it was stolen.
No, I just thought it was funny, so I forwarded to you, and I thought what Jason said back to me was just kind of funny. I'll just take it as my friend who's not on Twitter. I'm like, yeah, that's funny. I'm not on Twitter. And then I was, you know, also had to drink a Miller Lite, and I'm like, okay, nothing less of it, put it in my pocket. But yeah, that's from Tamara Anderson brought that to you.
Wow, so it's not even your stuff.
I never claimed it was.
Jason, you might want to rescind your comment on him still having his fastball.
Yeah, well,
somebody still
got their fastball. It's just that Anderson. Well, it's still an Anderson.
It's still an Anderson.
So it's just not an Anderson. Yeah, no,
but they were.
Anyway,
but I watched that, and I felt in the end it was. I said there are two things. I get it's preseason, but it was still alarmingly poor, even for
yep.
a preseason. And it's sort of the parent line, right? It's not that I'm angry because we've got 3 weeks left, but I certainly was disappointed. You know,
that's a pretty.
And
good line.
And I thought LaFleur was afterwards because I get home to watch him, you know, speak and think. I thought it was one of those where he kind of, at least he called it, but I'm waiting for him to say, like, we must have really stunk as coaches that these guys didn't do anything, you know? Because it's just, it was so alarmingly bad. Before you got on, I said to Alex, I said, like, that's not one of those games where we have to go back and look at the tape to see exactly what was happening, right? Like, that was just, everything was bad, and you didn't need tape or 8mm film or Polaroids. You're just like, wow, that didn't take, you could see stink with the naked eye.
Absolutely. On all the things you said. Now, let me ask you a question, because this is what I have. And look, we're on to Indianapolis, right? But the issue is, what does this mean moving forward, right? The game's over. What did you get from it? And by the way, there were certain people that played well. Jordan Morgan, for one of them. Kingsley Enagbare played well. Jacob Monk did not. A few others did not. But I did find myself wondering, was LaFleur as angry as he purported himself to be, or was that theatrical to send a message to his guys? Because, as I said to Strofe earlier in the week, when I have to be the calming voice of reason that says to LaFleur, Matt, I think we even have the clip somewhere. I know you're pissed, but like you're missing your top three wide receivers, and he cuts me off, which is usually a pretty good strategy given how long my questions are. But you know, he was so apoplectic that it just made me wonder: is this real, or is this, hey, I need these guys to think that I'm really, really, really mad. I'm just sort of mad. Because it was that bad.
I don't think it was performative. I don't think it was performative only because, as I said, everything that disturbed you about the team last year, anything that was annoying last year, every one of those flaws was still there and visible again in that game. Drop passes, mm-hmm. couldn't get to the quarterback, holding call, like almost everything that was an issue last year was there and an issue again. And I think that mm-hmm. to me, yeah, for him, you're like, wait, that can't, how do we, like, why did, what were we doing the last 3 weeks? We might as well have been just practicing, I don't know, pick another offense. Why didn't we just run the wishbone? Because whatever we ran didn't look like we practiced it before. And, but that was the part that bothered me the most, is literally every part. Hey, look, they threw that little 6-8 yard pass right over the line to the front of the linebackers, and there's another first down and third down, and we didn't get them off the field. Like, just every glaring weakness that the Packers showed last year was there again. And so that was, so I think that's probably the root of his issues. And I think it should be.
Yeah. I'm eager to see what it looks like on Saturday, obviously with Malik Willis running the offense. But here's the thing now.
He's good against the Colts, so we're all right.
He is. It's a great matchup for him. Here's the thing that, you know, and I asked Goody this, and, you know, he had a great line about how he was thinking about Ted before the game when there was some lightning in the area, and he thought that, and Ted would have said, oh, maybe they'll cancel the game. Because he didn't want his guys playing preseason games. Like, he was Mr. Bubble Wrap, and I am, you know, I am Ted Thompson's son when it comes to that. But he did, I mean, it basically defeated the purpose of playing all your starters, right? Not only did you get your quarterback hurt, but you didn't really do anything good. So I suppose you can look at it as, oh, well, we got that out of our system, right? Like, we had a bad game, everybody saw it, so at least it, you know, it happened when it doesn't count. But, like, you put your guys at risk for what? To stink the place up? That's not good. That's a problem. So, again, we'll see how they respond, but, you know, I don't know if you guys saw this, but I did. I know Strofe gets the newsletter, which I didn't even put out today because there was so much news. But I did ask Love after the game about the sack he took, because it did look a little bit like what happened in Brazil, where he got kind of spun around and he got hit again. And I just, again, my helicoptery personality certainly factors into that. But like, I just found myself thinking, God, you can't put yourself in harm's way like that. You can't, don't hold on to the ball in a preseason game. Don't try to make something out of nothing in a preseason game. And now, lo and behold, as it turned out, he actually did get hurt on that play.
Well, hopefully he's actually back in a week, like they've told us. Quick timeline for a procedure, but I also did not get a medical degree.
By the way, that is such a quiet, just such a nebulous, a procedure. Like, do we have any?
Yeah, they won't call it a surgery, so I don't know what that means.
Yeah,
I know what it means. So I think what in their vernacular, which by the way, a surgery is a surgery. If you have arthroscopic surgery, it's right in the name, surgery. So let's not pretend it's not surgery. It's minimally invasive, but it's still surgery. So, you know, when they say procedure, it's a euphemism.
Yeah.
Because, but I get why they want to do it. And we can play word games. That's fine. I prefer word searches over euphemisms, but the bottom line is that something happened that was significant enough. And look, kudos to our guy Domofsky, who, while I was taking one more day to recover from my own, well, I didn't have a procedure. I just, Dr. McKenzie told me to take the week off and then quit. But while I was not at practice, it's never a good sign, put it this way, when the head coach and the top two athletic trainer guys and your quarterback are all having a quorum after practice, and the quarterback is flexing his non-throwing hand. So clearly it was an issue. You know, Goody and LaFleur told us today that, you know, he basically went through practice on Monday to see how it was. I do look forward to seeing Jordan. I don't want to text him about this or anything like that, but I do look forward to seeing him because I want to say, hey, when I asked you after the game about taking that sack and the danger there, were you already feeling it with your thumb? Like, I'm not saying you should have told me. I'm not saying that at all. But, like, it is kind of crazy that you ask a question like that and then it turns out you have to have a procedure. I really want to know if this is going to change any of the philosophy in that building, because, you know, I started my question today to Goody about whether or not he was in Pittsburgh like I was the day that Jordy tore his ACL. And this is nowhere near that awful. Again, all the reports about him coming back in a week, great. That's all good news. That said, it could have been way worse, right? Like, Favre busted up his thumb in a preseason game at Camp Randall Stadium against Denver. And yes, he played with it. But again, that was a risk that they took that probably wasn't necessary. And so I just am very curious to see if they go away from this down the road and allow, you know, and say, look, these just aren't worth the risk. We're going to do all of our work with our starters in joint practices, and we're just not putting guys out there when they can get hit, especially our quarterback.
All right, Jason, we know you got to run. Got to do the Jesse Nelson show. We appreciate you taking the time. Appreciate the insights. Good stuff as always.
All right, guys. Take care. Be good.
That is the great Jason Wilde. Hear him each and every weekday from 9 to noon on Wilde and Tausch with the Packers Hall of Famer and Super Bowl champion Mark Tauscher. I am I'm starting to think the Brewers might never lose again.
They're going to go into the playoffs with a 54-game winning streak.
They might. Like,
if they win tonight, if they beat Skeens tonight, then they will go into the playoffs with a 54-game winning streak. They're going to be 118-44.
I'm so glad we're on the same page. We will talk about the unbelievable run the Milwaukee Brewers are on. Coming up next, it's the Homer Hour with John Anderson. John Anderson's Homer Hour right here on ESPN Wisconsin. John Anderson's Homer Hour. Alex Stroh with you as well on this Tuesday evening. So, John and I sound like we're on the same page. The Brewers are never going to lose again.
Ever.
I can't.
Most remarkable time in my life.
It's legitimately unbelievable. I'm running out of ways to describe how ridiculous what we're watching is. Because just when you think they're out of it, they're never out of it. The other night they're down 5-0, and I'm thinking to myself, yeah, they're still going to win. I mean, like, they just don't lose. And, you know, they've done this a few times in the last week where they're giving guys rest days, as you do in a really long 162-game season. But it's a night where Yelich, Frelick, and Terang all didn't start. And they still find ways to hit home runs. They still find ways to score runs in unique ways. Like, there was an RBI bunt at some point in that game. Everything, every night, it's just an absolute pleasure to watch this team because they're unique, they're fun, they're fresh, and by the way, they don't lose. They just don't know how. They've lost four times since the All-Star break. They have not lost in the month of August. I'm running out of things to say about them, John.
And it'd be one thing like if it was August 3rd.
Yes, correct.
You know?
Correct.
We're 11 days into August. That just doesn't happen. It is, and I'm with you, like they've had, in the streak, there's been at least five games where they could have lost them. There were a couple where you're like, okay, well, the streak ends here. That's fine. Nine's pretty good. And then somehow they win again. You're like, well, this is impossible. People don't. And every day you go on and you look, if you're like me, you're checking the starters and the whole thing on ESPN.com, and here's the win probability. And in all these games, they're favored. Tonight even with Skeens, not by a lot, but they're favored. But like yesterday, they had like a 63% chance to win. And you're like, well, sure, if that was just one game. But, like, what are the odds of winning 10 in a row? Like, not 63%.
No, it is not.
At some point, those going to catch up. And it's just, it is. In fact, today, I think I told you, I talked to Josh Maurer today.
Yeah.
And I said to him, I said, I can't decide right now if the Brewers are ridiculous or preposterous. Because I think we've moved up to preposterous. Like, it's just, that is just, it makes no sense for anybody to win that many games and continue to come back. And, you know, and the Mets are, even though they're scuffling, you know, you're like, how does that happen?
Yeah.
You're down. It's 5-0. It's 6-3. You're doing right. Yeah, we'll scratch one out in the eighth. We're tied, lo and behold. And every night, like, how many different guys have hit some walk-off home run? Like, there's been six. It's ridiculous. Yes. And so I have, you know, was it Quintana? Who was it that they'd won 10 straight of his decisions or 10 straight starts? You're like, okay,
Quinn,
well, that's
Quinn Priester up to 11 now.
Priester,
yeah.
Quinn, yeah.
Or 12, like, okay, I think it's 12 now.
And now it's 12 because they get down 5 and still made it. So it is one of, and I keep thinking to myself, because you know me, I'm the realist. Gosh, I hope we're not spending some good karma that we could use later.
So I was just about to ask this because preposterous is the right word.
I don't believe in it.
Okay.
I don't believe in that. Like, here it is. You just play and I think they get what they deserve. They play hard. They don't give up at bats. They just keep going. And sure, at some point it's going to get snuffed. But just, there are 30 freaking games above 500. And the Cubs you're worried about, and I'm still worried about, because what, don't they have five with them coming up? That'll be a big one. But it's just astounding that you can keep doing this and doing this and doing this. And it's super fun to watch.
Yeah, preposterous, like I said, is the right word. And to be real honest with you, I'm not concerned about the sustainability. The karma, I think, is the word you just used. Because I think this is sustainable. They are proving time and time again why they are the best team in baseball. They are proving time and time again why they are 30 games over 500. They are proving time and time again why they have such a massive lead in the NL Central all of a sudden, even though just over a month ago they were four games back. Because the pitching is as good as anybody in the league. And they just have a bunch of young, hungry players that are good with timely hits. They are all of a sudden in the last week or two hitting more and more home runs. I truly believe this is sustainable, and the World Series good.
They win a lot of different ways. But the two things they always do well, offensively win a lot of different ways. But they pitch well, and they field well every day.
Yep.
And so there you go. That's a start. I've watched a lot of baseball. Nobody has ever won a game which the other team didn't score. So every time you hold them down like that, what I find astonishing is, like, they hold the Dodgers, right, a couple of games, like the Dodgers just don't score. And then the day the Dodgers score seven, like, cool, we'll get eight.
Yep,
like,
we're good.
And so where did that come from? Then they go to Washington, and now they're murderer's row. And, you know, those guys aren't great. And by the way, it turned out they went to Colorado and got hammered again, or somebody pounded them. But it's just day in and day out, it's really amazing. And then, so they don't do the trade deadline. Totally fine with that, right? Pitching, you got a surplus, hang on to that. If you had a surplus of catchers, fine, move one. But there's, I don't believe there's such a thing as a surplus of pitching.
I agree.
So hang on to that. And now you're like, well, do you get a? We could use a bat. Great, they're doing all this. Churio's coming back. He hadn't played in how long? Like, you're going to get him back. Nestor Cortez at this point, I don't know. Do we even mess with trying to give that guy another start when he comes down? When I got here the other night, he'd done some nice work down there in the Oyashwabanon, in Appleton.
Yeah.
Grand Chute. He'd been there and he'd thrown well in Grand Chute for a couple of innings.
Good technicality by you. That's a Northeast Wisconsin guy right there. They are in Grand Chute, not Appleton.
Yeah, they like that, though. Like, they're not the Appleton Foxes anymore, that's so we got to make it right. But you know, now Churio comes back. Okay, can he come back and thump a little bit? And now you're more formidable. But they're formidable because literally every one of those guys just grinds out at bats, and even the ones that are outs turn out to be productive. And it doesn't hurt that Vaughn, we traded for Mickey Mantle.
Yep, Babe Ruth.
Barry
Bonds 2.0, whatever you want to call him, it all fits because he's been that good since he wound up in Milwaukee. All right, couple final thoughts on the Brewers and the Pirates. It's Paul Skeens and Freddie Peralta tonight. What a pitching matchup that is. We will get those final thoughts in as we wrap up the John Anderson edition of the Homer Hour right after this on ESPN Wisconsin.
Welcome back to the Homer Hour on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.
Behind the Bucks podcast on the Bucks Plus Audio Network, presented by Gallagher, your trusted insurance broker and HR and benefits consultant. Behind the Bucks brings you exclusive access and untold stories about the greatest stars and moments in Bucks history. Go behind the scenes of Giannis's Emmy-nominated documentary. Hear about the true origins of Bucks and Six culture and much, much more. Find Behind the Bucks on Bucks.com/plus, the Bucks app, the new ESPN Wisconsin app, and wherever you get your podcast. Behind the Bucks is presented by Gallagher. John Anderson, Homer Hour, couple minutes left. It's Paul Skeens, Freddie Peralta, one of the best pitching matchups of the year for the crew tonight as they go for their 11th win in a row. That is two away from George Webb cheeseburgers, which I know John Anderson, that's why he's in Wisconsin. He heard that George Webb may be offering free cheeseburgers later this week. You'll be locked into this one tonight, right?
Yeah, because I can, you know. I sent Brian Anderson a text on Friday because No relation. Better golfer, better broadcaster, better baseball. Like, this, yeah, nothing. It's not even close. But I sent him a note. I'm like, I took a picture of the screen as I was in a tavern for a Friday fish fry. You know, it's one of those places that serves fish on Friday and Wednesday, just depending on, you know, the services. And I just tell him, like, boy, like, this is living right here. You know, give me a double perch, a little slaw.
Yeah.
And the rye bread. You can hold the onion. And now I'm watching you. And I just said, I need some closed captioning, but I'm just assuming, you know, you're getting the names right. So, cause usually he does.
Yeah. Here and there.
I think that was the Isaac Collins night, maybe. So it was absurd, but, so I was locked in for that. And then the last two I've been having to watch on the phone get updates because, you know, I've been immersed in the Rockers. But tonight I think I'll be able to, you know, take in the whole ball game, which is nice, which is something I don't realize. Like, you don't realize how much you miss it. It's like the one time, I told you a story years ago. I was fortunate enough. I went down to Milwaukee, played in LeBroy Butler's golf tournament that he had. And we were up at Door County for the weekend. Over the week. And so driving back, I left right around 7:05 and I'll turn on, there's Uke and calling it. And I drove and the game ended right when I got to Door County. And I kind of was thinking, I wish it had gone 12 innings because I'd have just driven around the UP and gone, because it's just, you don't get it very often. And you know, yeah, I'm a huge Brewer fan, but you don't realize that you miss it day in and day out like that.
Yeah, we're spoiled.
And so, yeah, I look forward to sitting down and watching and then listen. I love the Brewers, but Skeens is worth the price of admission, right, to watch that cat throw.
I don't know how often it's happened. You're, as we mentioned earlier, established earlier, you're older than me. Has a Cy Young winner ever had a losing record?
I don't know if he has a losing record. Like, King Felix with Seattle was really close. And he was close. The Grom won a couple that were, like, I don't think he even had double-digit wins.
Well, hopefully, so hopefully Skeens is 7-9 after tonight. He's 7-8 entering this matchup against Freddie Peralta. So
I'll take an L or an ND, just as long as it doesn't have a W.
Bingo. That's the great John Anderson. He's back with you next Tuesday. I'm Alex Groh, back with you tomorrow. Thanks, John. Good stuff as always. On the tee, coming up next on ESPN Milwaukee.